If you've ever tried to work on your running form, you might have been confused on where to start and what to even do. And you're not alone. Most runners know they should work on improving their running form, but with all the noise on social media, it's really hard to know what is right and wrong, good and bad, and what do I do with my hands? Today, we are going to talk about running technique tips for all runners that are backed by science so you can improve your running form.
Welcome to Rehab for Runners, the podcast for runners who are ready to get out of pain and run with more confidence. Dr. Lisa will guide you with the clarity you need to unleash your potential with tools, practical tips, and exercises so you can enjoy your runs and exceed your goals.
Welcome back to the Rehab for Runners podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Lisa, and I'm so happy to be chatting with you today about running form. Just a couple years ago, when I started getting into treating runners a lot more and was learning more about running, I was overwhelmed with what to even do with someone's running form. It was so overwhelming that I avoided it for years. When I listened to people talk about it, all I thought was, I know nothing, and they have just straight up confused me even more. Fast forward, and I quickly realized that if I wasn't addressing someone's running form, whether they are injured or just looking to stay healthy, I was doing them a disservice, and that just doesn't sit right with me. I threw myself into it, and I'm now Running Gait Analysis Certified Level 1 and 2, and I feel confident in knowing what someone should be working on and what they can ignore. Unfortunately, a lot of runners make the same mistakes when it comes to form, and this is costing them injuries. It's costing them to work harder without seeing much progress, and it's costing them a lot of frustration. That's why I put together a free masterclass that is starting next week, the week of May 20th, and we are going to go over in detail three of the most common running form mistakes runners are making that are increasing the risk for injury and decreasing their performance. This is completely free, it's gonna be live, and you will be walking away learning more about your running form and how you can improve it. If this is something you would be interested in learning about, I will put the link to sign up in the show notes and I look forward to seeing you there. I think one of the most common misunderstandings about someone's running form is that it does not have to look exactly like the runner next to you to be efficient. Everyone's form is going to look different because we are all made different and our biomechanics are a little different. Look at the woman who won the Boston Marathon 2 years in a row. Everyone said her arm swing was completely off, her form was inefficient, and that's clearly just not the case. What works for her is not going to work for someone else, but clearly she is still being efficient. I mean, she won the Boston Marathon 2 years in a row. Her pace was incredible for 26.2 miles. So our goal is not to replicate someone's form, but to be efficient with our form. Now, there are certain patterns when you are running that we do want to consider that keep us efficient, but you get to put your own uniqueness to it while keeping the basic principles. When I'm doing a running form analysis, the first thing that I am looking at, and I have an order that I look at things, but the first thing I'm looking at is someone's posture and their head position. When I think of posture, I think about what is the pelvis doing and what is the trunk doing. If the trunk, head, and neck positions are off, it's going to throw the arm swing off and it's going to throw the stride off. When it comes to posture, you want to be a tall runner. You don't want your head poking forward or your shoulders in that rounded position. If you're at a seated desk job, you might have that position right now. You don't want that when you're running. If your chin and your shoulders are forward, your trunk will be leaning forward, and this can cause you to hinge at your hips, and we just don't want that. Now, your pelvis is a tricky situation because as you stride, your pelvis is going to rotate forward just a little bit. As you stride with your left leg, it's going to rotate forward, and then stride with your right leg, it's going to rotate forward. And then it's also going to tilt anterior and posterior just a little bit too. The key word here is that it's just a little bit. It's always the extremes that get us in trouble. And this is going to be a reoccurring theme throughout this entire episode. You don't want to be in too far of an anterior pelvic tilt or too far of that posterior pelvic tilt. I usually see too far of the anterior pelvic tilt, but it is common and possible to also have that posterior pelvic tilt. And if you have a lot of hip flexor tightness, low back tightness when you're running, I do encourage you to try and play around with your pelvic position. You want to keep your core strong. You want to make sure that you're still going into that 360 breathing. You're not holding your breath and you're not breathing with your chest. This will allow it to not tilt too far anterior, because when that happens, now we're going into too much of an excessive lumbar curvature, specifically into hyperextension, and it puts things at a different angle, I guess you could say. Our biomechanics are just thrown off. Our hip flexor muscles thrown off. Our glute max is thrown off. It can't contract like it should. Hamstrings are thrown off because they're a little bit more lengthened. And that's just, at the end of the day, going to make our stride inefficient. So do play around with your pelvic position. Make sure that you're not tucking it too far back to where your ribs are far forward and you're leaning forward, and you're not tilting it too far forward to where your stomach is poked out and your butt is poked out too. We really want to find that happy medium. But this is something that you should be practicing outside of running and your strength training. Keeping a neutral pelvis, core strong, especially during those heavier lifts and work when you're working on core work and those unilateral movements. Now, if you aren't paying attention to your pelvis, let's say you are letting it tilt forward, causing an excessive curvature in the lumbar spine, that is the movement pattern that your body knows. It's going to be hard to correct it and get it right only when running. So pay attention to your pelvis when you are strength training. Having the proper pelvic alignment will also help you get into that 360 breathing that we talked about a couple weeks ago. Make sure you listen to that episode if you haven't already, especially if you are training in zone 2 this summer. I think it's 2 episodes back. Moving on to the leg swing. Now, this is the make or break part of the running form. This is the part where your form can look real efficient and effortless or totally out of whack and really increasing your risk for injury. What you do in your leg swing sets your foot up to hit the ground, and that is going to dictate if your body is, one, taking in a lot of ground reaction force, or two, absorbing the shock and then dispersing the force, which we want. We don't want number one, where you're taking in a lot of that ground reaction force. We really want to minimize it, and we really want to absorb the shock and then disperse the shock or disperse the force. Now, research shows that your running economy, which dictates your running performance, how efficient you are, can be improved by adjusting your stride, specifically your vertical oscillation, your posture, which we just talked about, horizontal oscillation, which we'll get into, and your stride parameters. The stride parameters that they looked at were ground contact time, or how long your foot is on the ground when you're running. They found that shorter ground contact time is associated with a better running economy, which we want. When our foot is on the ground for a long period of time, as the other leg swings through, it takes on more force because it requires more stability in the stance phase, and it has a lot to do with what is happening on the other side where that leg is swinging through. So as we are in stance phase, let's say our right foot is on the ground, left leg is swinging through, and our right ground contact time is high. So we're on the ground for a longer period of time. This indirectly tells me that your leg swing on the left side is long and you're most likely overstriding. Most people hear this and think, okay, I will just take shorter strides and get off the ground quick so I can decrease my contact time and improve my running economy. This usually looks like a really high cadence, and it's just going to be individual for the person. So I'm not going to say a number, but it is going to be a high cadence. I have a podcast episode on cadence that you should listen to if you're curious about that, because there is a lot that goes into cadence. But the main point is that I don't necessarily care what your cadence number is. I care what's happening to your running form because you're running at a certain cadence. Because let's face it, 165 steps per minute is going to look really different on me versus someone who's 6'2", and I'm 5'3". So it's just going to look different. So we can't say everyone should run at this number because there's so many other factors. And the main thing is that, again, I'm looking at, is 165 steps per minute, are you overstriding or are you understriding? Because again, it's just going to look different for everyone. So that's where it does come in handy to have a running analysis, because then you can really focus on what they tell you to pay attention to and what cues and what your cadence is actually saying about your running form. If you are taking short, choppy steps to get off the ground as fast as you can, you are still not efficient. So if we're overstriding, we're not efficient. And if we're understriding, we're not efficient. There is such thing as being on the ground too long that makes you inefficient. And then not being on the ground long enough also makes you inefficient. So you have to find the sweet spot. When we are taking these short, choppy steps, and I've done this myself, so I get it. It can also lead to us having more of that vertical oscillation, which is another one of the categories that dictates how efficient our running form is. We have all this energy when we're running and we're trying to move it forward. We want our momentum to move forward. But if you're taking these short, choppy, small strides with that quick leg turnover, and our energy we are creating is like, where can I move this energy? Because I can only go forward so fast taking these quick steps. That's where a lot of our energy goes into this vertical oscillation. How much bounce do you have when you run? Now, disclaimer, we are going to bounce some when we run. Ideally, though, we are bouncing less than 4 to 5 centimeters. And that is not a lot. I will say that is not a lot. So if you are trying to keep your head still when you're running, some people like to think of them running in a short, like height-wise, short room where the ceiling is low so they don't bounce as much, but you're still going to have some bounce. And that is perfectly normal. We just don't want to have too much bounce. Too much bounce means that our momentum is going up and more force down. And we are having some momentum going forward, but there's a lot of extra energy wasted because a lot of our energy is going up and down. The last parameter to improve your running economy is horizontal oscillation, moving too far forward. You might be thinking, but Lisa, you just said we want our momentum moving forward. And this is true, but running is a game of finding your sweet spot. You can have too much or too little of something in all parts of your form, and you have to find that happy medium. If our momentum and leg swing are going too far forward, it means we're overstriding, which increases the ground reaction force, causing us to place more load or force through different areas of our body and increase our risk for overuse injuries. And we do not want to increase our risk for overuse injuries, so it's really important that we do address overstriding. Now, the last topic I want to hit on is your foot strike, because one, I get so much SHIT for being a heel striker. And two, this is where a lot of misconceptions come from that I want to clear up. A study in 2017 looked to see if changing your foot strike pattern is beneficial, and I will attach that study below. But they were able to conclude that, drumroll please, changing to a midfoot or forefoot strike does not improve your running economy. It does not eliminate impact at foot ground contact, and it does not reduce the risk for running related injuries. Bam, case closed. But that's not the only study that concluded this, but I want to break it down, because oftentimes I will hear that a heel striker increases their braking force when they hit the ground, which increases the risk for injury. And I think this is where research is coming clean, and it's concluding that overstriding and heel striking are not the same thing. I will be covering this in the masterclass, so do make sure that you sign up so you can see the visuals. But heel striking is when your heel hits the ground first, and then overstriding is when your foot lands far out in front of your body. So heel striking, your heel hits the ground first. It doesn't necessarily say where in relationship to your body your heel hits the ground first. It's just saying your heel hits the ground first. Now, overstriding is saying your foot is landing far out in front of your body. So it is looking at where is your foot landing, whether you're forefoot, midfoot, or rear foot striking. Where is your foot landing in relationship to your body? Now, a lot of heel strikers do overstride because if you think about reaching your foot out in front of you, it is easier to be a heel striker and overstride. But just because you are a heel striker does not mean you are overstriding. More research about foot strikes really conclude that there are pros and cons to each foot strike. For example, if you're a rear foot striker, you're hitting the ground with your heel first, then you are more likely to develop knee pain. And if you are a forefoot striker, so you're hitting the ground first with like your forefoot, the ball of your foot, toes, you are more likely to develop ankle and Achilles pain. So do not change your foot strike. I wish I could shout that from the rooftops. If someone is forcing you to change your foot strike, thank them and then run away. Your risk for a stress fracture injury jumps so high. I can't tell you how many times I've heard of someone being forced into a new foot strike by these so-called running experts and ending up in a boot or with a new injury. Please do yourself a favor and do not force yourself into a new foot strike. I don't care how much pain you are in. Do not do it. If it happens naturally over time, cool. That is completely different. But run in your most natural form. I promise you, you are not missing anything if you change your foot strike. It is not always better on the other side of the rainbow. That concludes this week's episode. I know I said this week we were going to have another dietitian on, but that episode is moved to a couple weeks from now. It's going to be a really good one, so don't worry. We will still be chatting more about nutrition. If you enjoyed this week's episode, please rate and review it so I can continue bringing you free content. And I will see you in the free masterclass next week.